This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Live from the Investors Bank Studio, Boomer Esiason and Greg Giannotti, Boomer and Gio on the Fan, and simulcast across the country on CBS Sports Network. Good Monday morning. Hope you had a fabulous weekend. The New York Yankees, we've been waiting for a while, showed up on Saturday and Sunday, that's for sure. It was a really good feel around the team both days. Another nice win yesterday. Not much from the Gleyber Torres debut, but he's up. You're going to see a lot of him, and I got a feeling he's going to be another special part of this Yankees core. The Mets rained out after a terrible loss on Saturday. It is NFL Draft Week. We've got a lot of NBA playoffs, too, that Jerry will talk about at some point. Good morning, Boomer. How are you?
You know, I'm doing all right, Gio. You know, yesterday, watching the Yankees, you could easily say that when Severino's on the mound, they're virtually unbeatable.
Yeah.
I mean, that's basically what it comes down to, because when the other four guys are on the mound, and including Sonny Gray in another disastrous performance.
Oh, gosh, he's bad.
You know, it's like you just hold your breath. They have to score like 8 or 9 runs to win those games. So yesterday you saw Severino doing what Severino does, and he goes out there and he pitches lights out. And then, of course, the Yankees, the whole team was young yesterday. I know everybody's making a big deal out of that, but it kind of just accentuates everything we've been talking about in baseball, trying to find younger players, cheaper players, players that you have under contract and under control for longer years, as opposed to having those long-term contracts to those older players. And speaking of older players, I'm telling you, this Jay Bruce injury with the plantar fasciitis, forget it. He's going to be dealing with it all year. And people talk about he's going to be able to manage it. He's not going to be able to manage it. I'm telling you, just watching him run, watching him hit, and he is in a prolonged slump now. And you just watch the way he moves, I can see it. I could see how bad it is. I can see exactly how it's affecting him. And he could say whatever he wants, and people could talk about managing the pain and all that stuff. Day in and day out, asking him to do what he does, it is going to be this way the entire year. He may have a couple weeks there where, you know, he's actually hitting the ball and everything else. I feel bad for him because I know how debilitating it is, and I can watch him run, and I'm just like, man, this guy is – it's not right. And in order to treat the injury correctly, he has to have his foot in a boot for a minimum of 6 weeks. And that means sleeping with that boot as well, keeping your foot completely still. And I just, you know, in the middle of a baseball season, you can't do it. So, you know, managing it, trying to deal with it, it's definitely having an effect on him. And then the other thing that came out of the weekend is that, you know, Yoenis Cespedes now wants to go play golf. Look, nobody was mad at him for playing golf. The only time we got mad at him is when he was playing golf when he was injured and not playing baseball. That's when everybody got mad at him. So if this guy thinks that golf is going to help him, because God only knows, if he swings at any more pitches out of the strike zone, I swear to God, I'm going to rip my hair out. So it is it was kind of a weird weekend because the Mets, you know, they get rained out yesterday, and it's, you know, win one, lose one, and then the way they're losing.
I mean, it's just the Saturday night losses are my least favorite. Nobody likes to lose, period, but I just can't stand that. You're cruising, it's another DeGrom, great start, you're up 3-0, and yeah, all of a sudden, Ramos, walk, triple, drag bunt. What the hell happened? I mean, just like that lead evaporated.
I'll tell you what
That's
it is.
Gross.
You just
I said, hate
that. I'll tell you what just happened. Walk.
Right.
You walk the first guy in the inning, you're screwed. And Ramos and both Familia, the last few times out have been walking guys.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just like, and for Familia, it was the bottom of the order. It's like, Just freaking throw a strike. The guy is batting like 180.
It shouldn't have been a loss, man. I mean, those are back-to-back DeGrom starts. Think about where the Mets would have been if they won both of those games, too. I mean, they're in a nice spot right now. But they won both of those games that they should have won with their ace on the mound doing what he did in both of those games, being dominant, and you blow it for him twice in a row? That's disgusting. But also, we haven't failed to mention Matt Harvey going to the bullpen, which is what I would not have done that because – to me, Matt Harvey is not going to be good anywhere. He's not going to be good out of the bullpen right now. He's not going to be good as a starting pitcher. He clearly made it clear, a little redundant, but he did. They didn't want to go to the bullpen. To me, the only thing you needed to do was to get him out of here and to get him down somewhere in Florida to do some rehab starts and put him on the DL with some sort of dead arm or shoulder stiffness or whatever. Do you want to see Matt Harvey come out of the bullpen? Is that going to fix him? Is his changeup going to get better out of the bullpen? Is his slider going to get better out of the bullpen? Is he going to gain 3 or 4 miles an hour on his fastball just because he's sitting out in the bullpen? No, I don't think so. I think he needed more of an extended look to try to fix him. And right now, this is just another step to his ultimate demise as a Met. So we're not going to see him start a game, at least nowhere in the near future.
I'll tell you one thing, though. Dave Island is pretty spot on and honest, and I like it. I like the toughness. I like, hey, look, you deserve to be here or you don't as a starting pitcher. And essentially he's saying he doesn't deserve it. We all know it. Even he knows it. I don't care about what his personality is, you know, because it's not about him now. It's really about how he's affecting the team. Now, I will say this. Begrudgingly, he's going to go to the bullpen. I get it. I understand where he's coming from as a former athlete. I understand the A-type personality, the guy that wants to be on the mound, wants the ball every 5 days. I understand all that. But I'm sorry. You have not done your job. We have tried to go through this thing with you. You've gone through so many ailments, so many injuries, so many surgeries. We understand. We're trying to give you as many chances as we possibly can. And even you have to realize that you have not been sub four on ERA for over like 2 years now. So at the end of the day, you're going to do what we tell you to do. And as much as I would have loved to have sent him down, because of who he is and because of his mindset, he would not have accepted it. And I think you keep him with the big team. Now the question is, what kind of effect does he have on the team? If he is a pain in the ass, then you're going to have to do something about it. Because there is nothing than having a Joakim Noah type that is unhappy with the manager and the coach because he thinks he should be playing, when in actuality, we all know that he shouldn't be playing.
Right, they had to banish him away from the team.
Well, that's what I'm saying.
Yeah,
you know, if Harvey is going to be a pain in the ass to Mickey Callaway and Dave Island and is going to be pouting out in that bullpen, then that's when, you know, you have to go to extreme measures. And whatever those extreme measures are, whether it be to trade him or to cut him or whatever it is, even though he's still owed, you know, probably about $3.5 million on this year's contract, you got to do something. You cannot allow I don't know if this is the case, but if he is going to be a pain in the ass, you cannot allow that. Really can't.
And what type of situation are we going to see Matt Harvey in next? Now, he'll be available to pitch out of the bullpen tomorrow. Will be the first day he's actually ready to go.
We'll see what happens.
But what type of situation is that? Is it going to be the Mets are up or down 6 runs plus?
No, I hope not. I hope they put him in a situation where he's got to go in there and get 3 outs for an inning, like a seventh inning, kind of like a... You know, like a pre-setup guy. I don't.
With the way that he's pitched, I don't want to see that.
I get that, but I also understand that you're still trying to rebuild a guy's confidence and give him a role. You know, and Mickey Callaway and Dave Island have been through this a million times with pitchers, so I would like to think that he is in good hands, and he should recognize that he's in good hands, and he should try to be better by listening to them. You know, you're not going to get – I don't necessarily know that there is a better situation for a pitcher in Major League Baseball than what the Mets have to offer from a pitching understanding, from the coaches, from the mentality, from trying to help guys regain their confidence, to putting them in situations where they can be successful. So hopefully he is going to be amenable to this. If he's not, then it's extreme measure time.
Yeah, and I don't know how he's going to react yet. I don't want to judge the way he looked out in the bullpen and all of a sudden say he's going to take to this or not. I'd seen him sit out there. I don't know why I'm feeling bad for him at this juncture, but I do. I mean, I think it's just because of the injuries, a lot of stuff he couldn't control, stuff like that. But I felt bad for him. I was like empathetic for him sitting in the bullpen, guys smiling around him, him just staring into space. It was just weird. It's just a weird thing to see, knowing where he came from. So hopefully he realizes how important this is, but. Here, this is the problem with a guy like Matt Harvey where he is in his career. You know, he might be amenable to being in the bullpen. He might want to fix himself. He might listen to Mickey Callaway and Dave Island, do everything he needs to do.
I hope he does.
Take the high road in every situation and still not fix himself because he can't.
Yeah, well, yeah, that's the other aspect of all this. But I would tell you, if I were advising him after all he's been through, after everything that's gone on, I would say, just listen to these guys, let them work with you, and let them use you the way that they think they can get the most out of you, because it's a long season. There's nothing that says, say, come June, July, or August, that you are not going to be a starting pitcher again. That all could still happen. That is not off the table. And, you know, trying to rectify a guy and trying to work with him every day in the bullpen, you know, maybe that's the best way to go about this. I know that you wanted to send him down. His personality is not going to do that. I wouldn't even be surprised if he's trying to force the Mets to cut him anyway. That also could be on the table here when you get to the extreme measure part of it. So, look, this is what goes on. This is the trials and tribulations of these long seasons that these players play, at the matter what sport it is, and we're right in the middle of one right now, and it's big personality time. It's new manager, new pitching coach time. Now, those guys are not Dan Worthen. Dan Worthen basically brought all these kids up. These guys have been brought in to fix these kids. And I'm sure that Sandy Alderson said to him, hey, let me explain something to you, Mickey. The reason you're coming here is because the most important part of our team happens to be our pitching staff. Now, whatever you think it is necessary, there's no kid gloves. You go out and you push the buttons the way that you think you should be pushing them. And that's the one thing I do like. I don't like the fact that they're winning one, losing one, and I don't like the fact that their bullpen has blown two big ones now for DeGrom, because DeGrom has pitched his ass off.
God, it just drives you nuts. And on the other side of things with the Yankees, the one guy that really makes you cringe when you see him is Sonny Gray and what the Yankees do with him now. And to get him right and how important he is to his staff.
They won't do anything like move him around or any of that stuff.
No, but still, they're not going to put him in the bullpen. They're not going to send him down. None of that stuff's on the table right now, but he's got to get fixed. I mean, he didn't give him a shot again. So this was someone that it was a big start for him, just like it was a big start for Harvey in his last one, and he failed that test. And that's going to be something that has to be focused on. And as this starting pitching goes, so does the Yankees so far in 2018. When you see Severino do what he did yesterday, I mean, it's basically, it's a cakewalk. It's a cakewalk to a victory for them. And you're not going to get a Severino performance every single night for the Yankees, but you got to get better than what Sonny Gray gave you. So Sonny Gray is really the one thing that comes out of the weekend for the Yankees of a negative, because there's been so many positives. How about Miguel Andujar? This guy's like the best hitter in the lineup right now. He's been so damn good.
You know
good.
What he's saying? He's saying, look, man, you ain't sending me down.
Right.
I'm staying right here. I am going nowhere. And, you know, with all the troubles with Stanton and everybody, and even Gary Sanchez for the most part, the younger guys are actually doing their jobs. I mean, whether it be Didi Gregorius, I would say younger, he's a little bit older than those guys, but again, hits another home run. And I just think like guys like Andujar are making the most of their opportunity. Remember, when you're pitching against the Yankees, right?
Mm-hmm.
Where's the weakness?
Well, right.
Where's
now
the weakness in the lineup? Like
right.
When you're pitching against the Mets, from 7, 8, and 9, you get nothing. You suck. And so, but when you're pitching against the Yankees, 1 through 9, you got something you got to deal with. And even Austin Romine gets a couple big hits. So, look, the Yankees are good. They picked up 2 games on the Red Sox over the weekend.
Yeah,
the Red Sox lost the last
finally.
Two.
Yeah, finally.
Lost the last two to the A's of all teams.
Yeah, I know. So you needed to see that, right? You didn't need to
get
some hit.
And they got no hit.
I know. It's amazing. With the offense that they had going, to see that happen is just absolutely crazy.
Think about this. There are 4 games prior to this 2-game losing streak.
Yeah.
They played the Angels 3 games, and then obviously opened with the A's. 10 runs, 9 runs, 8 runs, 7 runs, then got no hit, and then scored 1 run.
Yeah.
It's amazing. That's one of those that's baseball Susan moments with the Boston Red Sox. And thank God that you saw that from them, because they were on pace to like have one of the great starts we've ever seen. So the fact that they took a little bit of a step back and the Yankees really had a couple of good games, taking 3 out of 4 in the series, and then a big win on Saturday, 9-1, and to do what you did yesterday to head into this twin series. And Minnesota's been a 500 team so far this year, so it's not like this is some red-hot Twins unit that's rolling through here.
All right, I got something for you now. Mm-hmm. I heard something over the weekend, and I, you know, flipping through the hockey games, the basketball games, the NFL Network, checking up on everybody's mock draft from here to there. I heard, you know, this just goes to show you how the NFL draft is and how we all see this thing and how they all see these kids, right? So who is like the odds-on can't-miss player in this draft?
Everybody's going to say Saquon Barkley.
Right, exactly, and rightfully so. Why? Why do they say that about him?
Well, I mean, he's a guy that is a running back who can make an impact right away. He can catch the ball out of the backfield. He can run.
You compare him to Le'Veon Bell.
Yeah, he's one of those guys. Le'Veon Bell, David Johnson, impact player right away, great athlete. That's why people say that.
An awesome guy.
Yeah,
awesome
guy. Yeah, there's not about him. Yeah.
Off the field, there's no problem,
sure.
Nothing, right?
Right.
So you would like, we'd all like to think that that's a positive, right?
Yeah.
I'd like to think it's a positive.
Why wouldn't it be?
Right, so here's some... Oh, God, it's one of these ex-GMs on one of these and I don't know, maybe they're just talking so much about this that they're always looking for something. He said, you know, to be a running back in the NFL, you got to have a little bit of dirtiness to you. There's got to be some dirtiness. There's got to be some gritty, dirty. There's got to be some angriness. You know what I mean? Like the Adrian Peterson of the world, the Ezekiel Elliott's of the world, the Le'Veon Bell's who's got a chip on his shoulder a mile high, right? He goes, where is that for Saquon Barkley? What does he have that? Does it, I'm like, God. Is he more like Blair Thomas, or is he more like is he more like LaDainian Tomlinson? Like who? Like which guy is he going to be? Like the point I guess the guy was trying to make, and I think we all agree with this. While we're also fixated with the top 10 picks, especially here in New York with the Jets and Giants going 2 and 3, the big thing is, like, there's a lot of failure that comes out of this draft.
Oh, yeah.
Every draft.
What was it? The the post today goes through the number 2 picks over
the
last
hits and misses, yeah.
Right, 40 years. And essentially, it's a 50% success rate. I mean, that the number 2 overall pick is a 50% success rate.
You know, and a lot of that has to do with a lot of different factors.
Yeah.
Okay, you know, some guys get injured. Some guys get drafted by a really crappy team, and that team never comes out of it. If you told me that the Giants would draft the quarterback number 2 right now this year, I would say to you it would be the smartest thing they ever could have done because of the way that their coaching staff is built, the way that their team is built now, the fact that they have an older quarterback coming back, the younger quarterback will be in the perfect incubator to learn how to become a pro. Like there's no like nobody's throwing them out there like they did to Deshaun Kizer in Cleveland and just almost ruined that kid.
Mm-hmm.
The kid had no business being on the NFL football field. None.
Right. And the way Hugh Jackson handled him too wasn't even
it was brutal.
It was awful. He's in there, he's out of there, he's in there, he's benching him, it's just disgusting.
And maybe they were trying to suck for Sam. I don't know. But like it all depends like where you go and what is the stable situation at the top. So I'm reading, of course, of all the, you know, the Jet quarterbacks of yesteryear, and I'm part of that list, and I'm like, you know, past my prime at the age of 32, you know, back then. But and I remember telling Rich Cimini, because he called me a couple weeks ago talking about like why have the Jets have had the problem at quarterback? And I said, well, it's pretty simple. I know, and I lived it for 3 straight years. New coach, new coach, new coach. General manager who dies in the middle of it, somebody takes over that has no business running it, and then they hand it to Richie Kotite, who has no business running anything, let alone like making all the decisions and financial decisions for a football team. And what I was trying to say to Rich is like, the Jets are just, they got to be consistent one of these years, like or one of these stretches of 10 years where they believe in the guy that they got coaching the team, where they believe in the GM that they got making the picks. And they will go through some downtimes, which they have done the last couple of years, in order to realize how good it can be if they get it right. And if the quarterback that they draft at number 3 comes here this year and may have to play because I don't know about Josh McCown and his, you know, injuries and all those other things and whether or not they really believe he is the guy that can go out there and play 16 games. I don't know. But if he comes here and he has to play with a team that is not loaded like Dak Prescott had with the Dallas Cowboys, there's a very good chance after his rookie year, people are going to say, bust. Bust, he can't play, no matter who the guy is.
Yeah. Well, we've seen it a couple times now with Jared Goff and out there with the Rams that first year. It was bust. That
and
was
they were
it.
Lucky that they got Sean McVay, a young, energetic, in-your-face.
Right.
I didn't really, you know, when I met Sean McVay at the Super Bowl,
yeah,
I didn't realize just how much of a presence that guy has.
Yeah, especially that height too, right?
Yeah, he's built. I mean, he like works out the whole thing and everything, and he's got that football crazy coach mentality. Like it's a cross between probably John Gruden and I would say Vince Lombardi, somewhere in there. You know what
wow.
I mean?
Wow. Yeah.
That's kind of what he permeates, right? And I'm like, holy crap. Now I know why Jared Goff was so good.
And who knows? Maybe Jeff Fisher stays there. A guy's a total bust. You don't know.
It's all about those
situations.
It's all about being drafted in the right situation, being in the, especially a quarterback. But, you know, I mean, if you're Saquon Barkley and you come to the Giants and you turn out to be, I don't know, Blair Thomas, it's going to be, oh, boy, I'll tell you. I hope that doesn't happen to that kid.
All right, football fans, the NFL draft is almost here, and the free Odyssey app brings you the latest coverage from the biggest sports radio stations across the country. Which players will help your team the most? Who will make a draft day trade? Will they be ready for week one? The local conversations about the team you love. All streaming free right here on the Odyssey app. Audacy. Download it today.